So just what were you doing 38 years ago? Oh, now I know. Some of you are going to say, I wasn't even born yet 38 years ago, but I know a few of you were, and I certainly was. It was the year 1979. In 1979, the Dow Jones average closed at 838. It's over 20,000 now, but 838. If you wanted to buy a house, you could go to the bank and get a loan. The bank would be delighted to loan you money at an interest rate of 15.25%. Remember those years? In 1979, 3,000 angry Iranian folks broke into the American embassy, took 90 people hostage. It was a national crisis. And it sure didn't help the price of gasoline, which we paid the outrageous sum of 86 cents a gallon. In 1979, Michael Jackson produced his breakthrough album, Off the Wall. And the Village People came out with a new song. But unfortunately, they were sued. They were sued by one of the biggest organizations in the country, claiming that the Village People had done a copyright infringement on the name of this song. The name of that organization? YMCA. In 1979, my parents received an evacuation notice from their home in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It seems that there was a fire at a nuclear power plant just down the river at Three Mile Island. In 1979, there were a group of crazy Oxford students that came up with this daredevil stunt that turned out to be a fad. It was called bungee jumping. But the really big news in 1979, you could buy a king-size beanbag chair for $19.99. I know, Mary Kay and I bought one. 38 years, a lot can change. And in fact, in terms of our human lifespan, 38 years is a big chunk of time. 38 years. That's the time that this paralyzed man was laying by the pool of Bethsaida. Now, depending on your translation of the Bible, it might say the pool of Bethsaida, it might say the pool of Bethesda, it might say the pool of Bezatha. It's all the same place. And archaeologists have discovered the foundation of that pool. You can go to Jerusalem and you can see the big foundation of rock that formed that pool. You see, this is not make-believe. This is not a fairy tale. This is a real story in a real place, in a real setting, with real people. And here's this pathetic, paralyzed man laying by the pool for 38 years, just hoping that when the waters got troubled, he could get into the healing, therapeutic waters. And it is a pathetic scene. You see, in biblical times, a paralyzed man would have been reduced to being a beggar. There were no social programs to help him, no insurance, no hospitals, no medicine as we know it today. Picture him there by the pool. He's got his little cup in his hand. He's just there by the pool day after day, hoping to get enough coins in his little cup so that tomorrow he could come back and lay by the pool one more time and collect his little coin. Now remember, this is real. This is not make-believe. This afternoon, you can drive into downtown Baltimore, down by the ballparks. You'll see them. You'll see them there by the side of the road. Some pathetic souls. They've got their little styrofoam cups, and they've got their cardboard signs that they've handwritten, homeless or helpless or whatever, and they're standing there by the side of the road, just hoping to get enough couple dollars so that they can get through till tomorrow so they can be back out by the side of the road with their little cups and their little cardboard signs. Pathetic. 38 years. This guy has been laying by the pool. And into this scene step Jesus. Isn't it interesting in the story that Jesus takes the initiative? Jesus goes straight for this guy. Oh, there are probably all kinds of people around the pool, but Jesus goes straight for this paralyzed man. And Jesus asks an amazing question. Do you want to be healed? And the answer that comes back is just as amazing. The man says, sir, in Greek it's kurie, it could be sir, it could be Lord. He says, sir, there is no one to help me get into the pool. And when I try to go, there's always somebody that rushes ahead and gets in first. Pathetic. Amazing. 38 years. And Jesus says, do you want to be healed? And the answer, no one has helped me. How do we understand this story? What is its meaning for our lives today? This amazingly profound story. I think there are two explanations we could come up with. I don't know which is right, so I'm going to throw them both out. And you can think through it and read the story yourself, and you can decide what you think is right. The first explanation is to take very, very literally the words of the paralyzed man. There's no one who has helped me. And so there he is. Now, you may say, Reverend, that's crazy. That's crazy. No one helped him in 38 years. Ridiculous. There's no way that that's believable. Oh, yes, it is. Are we willing to admit it? Are we willing to admit the horrible truth that just maybe, there was no one who helped this man? Do we not hear echoes of our modern world and our modern society and indeed our modern lives in those words that no one helped? I've got a confession. I am not proud of this. I'm ashamed of what I'm about to say. I go into downtown Baltimore all the time. You know, I go to University Hospital or Johns Hopkins or Mercy Hospital. That's what I do. And I see them there. And sometimes instead of helping, I'll turn my eyes the other way. You know, I'll see him coming. I'm there stopped at a traffic light. And I see the guy coming. He's got his little cup. He's got his cardboard sign. He's coming right toward me. Oh, gosh, he's coming right to me. Whoop, I got to change something on the radio station. Or maybe I got to send a real quick text before the light changes. Or wonder what's going on over there at the stadium. I turn my eyes. Have you ever done that? When you see him coming with their little cup and their cardboard sign, have you just kind of turned your eyes? And as Peter, Paul, and Mary used to sing, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? Yeah, this is real. This isn't make-believe. Dare we admit it? Whenever we take people and we marginalize them and push them off as if they didn't matter, as if they were not children of God, as if they were not those for whom Christ died on the cross, when we push them off and marginalize them, the poor, the hungry, the homeless, the needy, women, blacks, Mexicans, Muslims, Jews, Native Americans, you can fill in the blank with whatever you want, because there are times in our history when you could have written in the Irish or the Italians, or the Chinese, when we take people and push them as if they didn't matter, as if they weren't human beings made in the image of God, do we not hear echoes of this old, old story? Sir, there's nobody, no one to put me in the pool. Well, that's one explanation. Now, you don't have to buy it. That's okay. That's one. Second explanation focuses in on the question that Jesus asks. When Jesus says, do you want to be healed? And again, you might say, now, wait a minute, Reverend, that's crazy. The guy's been there for 38 years, day after day. Of course he wants to be healed. That's crazy. Nobody's going to buy that explanation. But dare we admit that it could be true? Do we not hear echoes of that in our own lives, in our own society, in our own world today? Is it not the case that Jesus understands that profound reality that sometimes it's easier to lay by the pool than to engage in a change of lifestyle and make a difference? Am I willing to love? Am I willing to love with a sacrificial, self-giving love as Christ loved, or am I content to lay by the pool of my own self-centeredness? Am I willing to forgive, to give it forth, to give forth that resentment and bitterness that's been in my heart? Am I willing to do that? Or am I content to lay by the pool of my own resentment and anger and bitterness? Am I willing to trust that God will provide? That God will provide. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to eat or what I'm going to drink or what I'm going to wear or how much money is in my bank account. The Lord will provide, provides for the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. The Lord will provide. Am I willing to trust in that? Or am I going to lay by the pool of my own greed and accumulating to get more and more and grab more and more to build up security in my life? Even though in this world there is no security, a world where moth and rust corrupt and thieves break in and steal, and the only security we ever have is by the grace of God. Am I willing to trust, or do I lay by the pool of my own materialism? Am I willing to be a soldier of the cross, a follower of the Lamb, a disciple of Jesus Christ? Or am I content to lay by the pool day after day, seeking my own agenda? Do you want to be healed? Well, there's a second explanation. Yeah, you can buy it, you can reject it. I believe that there is truth in both of these explanations. And there is good news in both of these explanations, because in both cases, Jesus speaks with a commanding authority, take up your bed and walk. Take up your bed and walk. You can be healed. You can be saved. You can be transformed by the power of Almighty God. Your life can be changed. Take up your bed and walk. You can't be so bogged down in your own self-pity. You know, your own little pity party. Oh, poor me. Poor me. There's nobody to help me. Here I am stuck. What am I going to do? Poor little me. You can't be so bogged down in that pity party that the power of Christ cannot change and transform and make a difference. And you can't be so enmeshed in your own self-centeredness that your heart can't be changed to love and be compassionate and forgiving and good and serving and Christ-like. Christ can do that in your heart. I know that's what you really want to do, isn't it? Because it's love is the only thing that's going to last when all the things of this world have gone away. Christ can make that difference, can transform and change. You can't dig a hole so deep that Christ can't pull you out. You can't be so low that Christ can't lift you up. Jesus is simply saying, you do what you can do, and I'll do what I can do, and your life can be healed. Jesus is simply saying, you bring what you've got, and I'll bring what I've got, and you can be changed and transformed. You want to be healed? Take up your bed. Walk. I believe that this profound story of the gospel causes each of us to ask a question. What age is the best age to be a disciple of Christ? What age is the age when I can most effectively, most efficiently, most powerfully be a disciple of Christ? What age? And the answer is, whatever age you are right now, even if you've been laying by the pool for 38 years. Take up your bed